Hello.
Hi. Could you start by telling me your full name, your date of birth, and where you were born, please?
Yes, my full name is Michael George Tittershill. I was born in Ormskirk.
And date of birth?
My date of birth, 11th of March, 1944.
Great, thank you. Sandy, can you start by telling me just a little bit about your early life, your family, and, you know, how you ended up at the Blue Coast?
Yes, I will. Yes, I was brought up in Ormskirk. I was one of three brothers, and we all lived very close to the cricket club in Ormskirk, and we all became cricketers. Two of us became teachers, and the third one was a chemist. So I started out in Liverpool in 1965 as a teacher. And I moved twice in my first year and came to Blue Coat as the PE teacher in 1966. I came just after England won the World Cup. So September 1966, I was the new 22-year-old PE teacher.
And what was the school like at that time?
Oh, much smaller and much different. It was very Spartan as well. It had a small boarding house attached to the school. Very, very difficult circumstances for the residents, of which I was one. Quite difficult. There were no carpets in those days, no televisions in the rooms, only one TV for all the boarders. So it was quite a Spartan life in the 60s.
Were you actually living in, looking after the boarding?
That's right, houses? Yes. There were between 5 and 10 resident masters. And also the matron who lived in.
So how many pupils would have been at the school at that time, can you recall?
Yes, I can. Yes, the advertisement that I responded to when I applied for the job stated there were 450 boys in the school, of which about 100, or just over 100, were boarders. And it was, essentially, in those days, it was called a voluntary-aided bilateral school for boys. Bilateral meant that there was a grammar school, there was a grammar school form, there was a modern school class, and there was a third class, the C stream, which was a bit weaker.
Right, okay. At that time, what was the sort of reputation of the school? Was it regarded, I mean, it's always been a famous school, but
yes.
Was it regarded as being an academic school? How would you place it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't regarded as being academic. There was no sixth form in those days.
Right.
And in those days, children left school at year 10, at the age of 15.
Yeah.
This was before Rosler, which was the raising of the school leaving age, which occurred about 5 years later.
Yeah.
So the boys left, most of them left aged 15. The good ones, if you like, stayed on to do GCE into what we now know as Year 11.
Yeah.
And after then, the great majority left. I remember the sixth form being about 10. Boys would be in the sixth form. And the only A-levels we offered in those days were in physics, chemistry, and history.
Right, interesting combination.
Very, very small career. Well, it all depended upon which teachers you had at the time and their capability of teaching A-level.
Yeah.
So it had very small beginnings.
So was it a good atmosphere? How would you judge the school? How did it feel to you
right.
coming in?
The school was renowned, for its uniform,
yeah.
B, for the behaviour of the students, which was notable for being good.
Yep.
So the reputation of the school was good, there's no doubt about that, but it wasn't terribly strong academically at that time. But not strong in any other sense, because the sports teams were generally weak, because there weren't many pupils in the school.
Yeah, yeah.
Music and drama were virtually non-existent in those days.
Right.
But the boys did the best, of course.
Yeah. So when you arrived, who was head teacher? Was it Mr. Watkin?
Yes, it was. Mr. Watkin appointed me, yes.
And,
that's right.
Then within a couple of years, I guess, Peter Arnold Pratt would have taken over?
Yes, he did. He arrived in 68, yes.
So I gather, and you'll know better than me, that
Yes.
Is that correct?
He was a brilliant head, absolutely first class. He was already a head when he came. He was head of Gravesend Grammar School in Kent.
Yes.
And he came up here to take over Bluecoat. And at that particular time, grammar schools across the country, well, grammar schools across Liverpool were being phased out, and it was the era of comprehensive schools. So the whole city was converting from selective education and secondary modern schools over to comprehensive schools.
Yeah.
And it was a time of great change. And Peter Arnold Craft spotted the gap.
Right.
And the gap was that when all the schools were comprehensive schools, there would not be any selection. There would not be one school that stood out. So he put Bluecoat into a reverse situation, really, because he wanted Bluecoat to be a little bit more selective.
Yeah.
And stronger academically, and he wanted to attract the best boys in the city.
Yeah.
And he did it through a system of interviews. So we started to interview for entrance into Bluecoat.
Yeah, and I gather his philosophy was that if he needed a good basketball player or a chess player or somebody more academic, then he could sort of see how they would fit into his bigger plan for the school. Is that correct?
Yes, the interview system, for the most people would say to you that the interview system was a secret. Nobody quite knew how it worked,
yeah.
and that was really the idea. We never said, it wasn't transparent, it wasn't open, it wasn't obvious what was going on with the interviews, but we used the interview system, A, to pick clever boys. That was the first thing. We picked mainly clever boys,
yeah.
And after that we picked good sportsmen, good musicians, good chess players. There was always a reason why the boys were selected. It could have been anything, but generally it was because they would be good academically, at least good,
yeah.
And able to take advantage of the teaching that was on offer.
So
but if there was a good swimmer or a good chess player or a good musician, they would come as well.
Right, okay, and I gather also Arnold Craft was keen to look over the parents. Was that correct?
Yes, we like to see the parents and involve them. Yeah,
yeah.
That's quite right.
Because I guess most youngsters' academic goals are set by the parents, aren't they, really?
Yes. The parents were never quizzed in the interview. They sat quietly and listened and watched and saw it all. But it was important that the school put on a good display in front of the parents.
Okay, yeah.
And we wanted the parents to see what was going on and to see how well or how not well the children did in the interview.
Yeah. And so you must have seen then quite a sea change in the actual academic movement or progress of the school then, with suddenly this influx of much brighter
yes.
kids coming in.
It made terrific progress during the 1970s.
Yeah.
By the end of the 70s, the school was complete. It was fully selective. It was really run like a grammar school.
Yeah.
It was very academic, with a growing sixth form. It grew to 50, then 100, then 150. The total number of pupils when Peter Arnold Craft retired in 1989 was about 650.
Right. And because I understand, I think the first person only went to Oxford at all.
Yes.
16 or something like that.
The first boy went to Oxford, that's quite right, yes. He went to read English, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
When you see the school's output for the top universities, that's quite a shock, isn't it, that change has taken place?
Yeah, yes. Peter Arnold Craft was the guy who really made the school what it is today.
Yeah.
And he is the guy who takes all the credit. He was a terrific head. He was good at almost every aspect of leadership. This is the point. He wasn't just for clever boys and success in exams. He encouraged sports. He came to watch the sport. He came to all the music and all the drama.
Yeah.
He encouraged people to get involved. He turned out all the time to watch the students and to listen to them. And of course, he lived in schoolhouse.
That's right, next door.
So he was on the job, as it were. So it was a bit easier for him, in a sense. But because it was a boarding school, he was required to be resident.
I see. Okay. So, and I was going to ask you, how did the staff regard him? Were they as enthusiastic as the people?
Well, by and large, yes. Most of the staff liked him because they could see that he was dynamic, and he ran a good school. And most of them were appreciated by him. The only ones that weren't were those that didn't get involved in all these activities.
Yeah.
There were always one or two who shunned the voluntary activities, which basically they were.
Yeah.
There was no requirement to stay after school. There was no requirement to take a sports team. The teachers were willing volunteers.
Yeah.
But of course, there were a small number of teachers who didn't like all of this and wouldn't take part, and they, of course, were the ones who didn't much like the headmaster.
Yeah, yeah.
But the great majority did,
yeah.
And the great majority worked very hard for him and yeah. for the pupils.
So, with the expansion of the school as well, did you see the sports team start to thrive? And,
yes, expand? Immensely, immensely.
Any particular memories of those days that you cherish?
Well, the football team suddenly all became, instead of losing all the matches, we started to win pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
That was the most obvious change, that we had a lot of success. We used to win the cups and the shields and the knockout finals. We would go forward into national competitions, and eventually in 1987 we became the champions of England. So it was a terrific kind of 20 years under Peter Arnold Kraft. And it wasn't just football, it was basketball. We were national champions in basketball countless times,
yeah.
and also in swimming.
Right.
We had a swimming pool in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
So swimming was a big sport, and even cricket was played successfully in the summer.
Yeah.
So sport was big and successful, and there was terrific interest from the boys in that, and they loved that.
Yeah.
And it gave them all a jolly good reason for liking school and coming to school and all of that business. They used to get up in the morning and want to come to school because it was fun.
Yeah.
As well as lessons, there was a lot of fun in sport, music and drama.
Yeah. So, and what was it like running this system of a day school and a boarding school together? How long were you actually involved with living in school? Did that come to an end?
Yes. Well, I stayed quite a long time. I stayed 20 years in the boarding house,
right.
and then I left to get married,
yeah.
and I remained teaching in the school for another 20 years, something like that. I was very lucky in the end, eventually, to become the head.
Yeah,
indeed. So instead of being the youngest teacher in the school, aged 22, I was now the head, and ended up retiring at 64.
So not a bad progress then, really.
So I was very lucky to stay such a long time in a really great school.
Yeah. So some big changes took place, though, because I believe that, I know that the boarding side was wound down, wasn't it, in the late 80s?
It was. It was wound down, yes. We had a lot of what we call Chinese pupils who liked to stay in the boarding wing, but the government stopped that and made it impossible for them to come.
Yeah.
They came from Hong Kong in the main because they wanted a British education.
Yeah.
But they stopped. That supply was cut off,
yeah.
which had a negative effect on the boarding house. So the boarding house dwindled in numbers. It fell below 100, and then it fell to 50 or 60.
Yeah.
And then it obviously became not viable.
So the military families had put their youngsters in as well, and of course the military was winding down, wasn't it? All the outposts, Aden, Malta, Germany.
That's right. There were a lot of servicemen's sons there in the early days, but as you say, they disappeared slowly. So it was a very difficult thing. Boarding education was going through a difficult period, and it probably still is.
Yeah.
So in that eventually it closed, I think, in 1989.
So big era. The school, I mean, school renowned as a boarding school, wasn't it? Big thing for it to disappear.
Yes, it was a big thing to disappear. Yes, and people were very sad.
Yeah.
Notably, the past pupils who'd been boarders, and all the traditions that we had with the school chapel and services and all that business, and together with all the activities that the boarders had. So
the ancillary staff there to look after them as well.
Yes, that's right.
So
yeah, everybody had to leave and move out.
Yeah. So at the time, was this when the south wing was sold off for conversion?
Yes. Just after. It was after that because when I became head, there was a big building development about to happen. It was a big part of my appointment, really, this building work, because somebody had to get it done.
Yeah.
And the governors had been about 2 years having different opinions about what we should do with all this money, because David Blunkett, the Education Secretary, had allocated the school £8 million to redevelop the school, which meant a rebuild. So, I mean, to cut a long story short, the South Block was sold off because it was, A, in bad state of repair.
Yeah.
It was sold off to the build to a group of builders, and they converted it into 45 flats on three different levels, 15 times three, 15 flats on the ground floor, 15 in the middle, and 15 on the top. And they were all sold quite quickly. It was a very successful venture. The governors made a certain amount of money out of the sale, of course. And this building project, which when I was the head, it started in 2002 and it lasted for 2 years up to 2004.
Yeah.
That was also a big part of the school's development.
Yeah.
Because there had been disagreements over what we should do. As I said, there was the previous head to me wanted to move the school altogether away from Wavertree.
To Netherley, is that right?
To
Netherley, was that the plan?
Well, Netherley was the preferred option of three or four.
Yeah.
One possibility was building it on the river bank at Otterspool and have the school overlook the river.
Yeah.
Another possibility was an old bus depot in Liverpool, which was vacant, down Edge Lane.
Yeah.
And the third option was, as you say, in Netherley, on the site of what then was the Netherley Comprehensive School, which was the preference of the current head, Michael Bell.
Yeah.
He wanted to rebuild a school from scratch out in Netherley. But Michael Bell lived in Huddersfield, and I don't think he appreciated quite the geography of Liverpool.
Yeah.
And had we moved to Netherley, it would have been really curious, because virtually no children from Netherley would have come to the school. It wasn't their kind of school. They wouldn't have wanted a grammar school in the middle of Netherley. So the local children probably would not have come.
Yeah.
So it would have been a very strange place to build the new blue coat. Mm.
So what swung it in staying in the original 1906 buildings then? How did that finally come about?
Well, it was because when I was appointed, the governors agreed that this is what they wanted to do, stay at Wavertree.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted as well. I'd been there a long time by now, and I thought it was a very happy school in Wavertree. I thought Wavertree was always proud of the school.
Yeah.
I thought the community, the residents nearby, everybody was comfortable with the school in Wavertree.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't a big site, and it wasn't a perfect site, but the school had been there a long time, and there was a lot of contentment about being in Wavertree. So the governors, and when I was appointed, I agreed that we would rebuild the school in Wavertree.
Yeah.
And get it done, as they say today.
Yeah.
So We did get it done, and I was appointed in 2001. The building work started in 2002. It lasted 2 years, and Lord Derby opened it in 2004. And the remarkable thing about this building work was that the school was decanted three different times as the job was done. So the builders did a third, and then another third of the school.
Yeah.
And the children, the pupils and the teachers had to move around every time a third of the school was complete. And on the on the playground, we had 20 mobile classrooms. So it was a bit like a village of mobiles on the playground. So when a particular wing of the school was being rebuilt, all the classes took place in the mobiles. So there was one third of the school being taught in the mobiles at any one time. The other two thirds were in the school, the old school, and another third was being built or rebuilt. And each time one of these sections of the building was completed, the students in the mobiles changed places. The people in the mobiles went back into school, and students in the school, another group, went into the mobiles. And we did it three times over. We were decanted three times. And during the two-year period, I mean, as the head, this business had some management issues, obviously. Teachers had to be happy. If it rained or if it snowed, it was more difficult because of the mobiles. So there were issues about it. The mobiles were cold. The heating wasn't satisfactory. But the point is, at the end of the day, because of goodwill and because of cooperation, not a single school day was lost to this building work. No time at all was lost. It was an amazing achievement. And it was all down to the cooperation of the pupils, principally, and of the staff, who got on with it and did it, even though it was hard work. And it was a great success. There's no doubt about it.
So the other great change that took place during your time, both before and during your headship, was the re-emergence of girls being allowed back into the school, which I think
yes.
started in the sixth form in 89, is that right? And then
well, yes.
year seven, it was 2002, was it that year seven when they started coming in?
It was, yes. And that was the other bit of the remit that I had from the governors when I became the head. That was to admit girls into year seven, which happened in 2002. It was quite controversial at the time, of course, because this meant the school would be co-ed.
Yeah.
The old all-boys school would slowly disappear as the girls grew up.
Yeah.
So it was quite on the face of it, not everybody agreed with this. This was a big change. Because this was a change that would seriously damage the sports teams of the school.
Right.
The boys' strength would now seriously be weakened on the football field and so on and so forth as the girls came. But you know, when the girls did come, and there were only 50 of them at first, they were outnumbered by the boys.
This was so into the sixth form, was that right, in 89?
Oh, yes, that happened in 89. It was a different matter, that. It was quite common in schools to have girls go into boys' sixth forms.
Yeah, yeah,
so that was a change all on its own in 1989.
Yeah,
that's right. So
sorry,
the sixth form.
I interrupted your flow. So carry on about the bigger change when the 50 came in.
Yes, the 50 girls were admitted into year seven in September 2002. At the same time, there were 70 boys alongside to make a cohort of 120.
Yeah.
In those days, that's how many there were in a year group. So we had 120 in the year seven of 2002, 50 girls and 70 boys. Nobody quite knew how this was going to work out because it had never happened before. A lot of staff had never taught girls before. So there was a point, really, of teaching styles and teaching ability with mixed classes, because there were no other mixed classes in the school other than in the sixth form.
Yeah.
So we had to give a lot of attention to these girls in the early days, and we had to ensure, A, that they were taught properly, taught well, and looked after properly. And we had to make sure that they were, that they were happy enough, and we didn't want any of them to leave or give up or be unhappy or unsettled or anything like that. Anyway, the fact is we shouldn't have worried, because all of them stayed. We didn't lose any of them for any reason. They all became pioneers. They were enormously confident.
Yeah.
They absolutely loved it, the girls. They liked being special. And they were special. And they reveled in their status. And they really did well. And as they grew up, they were always pioneers. They were always at the front of the girls. They moved up to year 8, 9, 10, 11, and right through the sixth form. And they were enormously successful.
But
very, very good.
The ambience must have changed from, shall we say, a testosterone-fueled male environment to something
it did.
Somewhat different.
It did. And the boys benefited from the new atmosphere in the school.
Yeah.
The boys suddenly became more settled. They actually found the girls jolly good company. They liked the girls. And of course the girls, the best girls in the school, of course, through the entrance tests, actually replaced the weakest boys.
Yeah.
If you work it out, that's what happened.
Because of course the exam entry came back in, didn't it?
We had exam entry in year 7, that's right, entrance tests. And because we took the top 50 girls, or whatever the number was, the people that didn't get in were the bottom 50 boys.
Yeah.
So the standards went up enormously year by year by year. Every time we took a group of girls, the overall standards in the school went up and up.
Yeah.
Until at the very end of the day, when the school was complete, as I was retiring in 2008, it was more or less complete then. The school was full of very clever boys and very clever girls.
Yeah. Carry on.
It's all right.
I was going to say that as you retired, that was the tricentenary of the school as well. Is that correct?
It was. Yes, it was.
Anything about those celebrations that you recall?
Yes, I do. I remember it very well, because it was, we put a lot into that, and I tried hard, with it being my final year, I tried hard to assist and help with the tricentenary. So yes, it was a big year, and it culminated with a weekend when the Old Blues were invited to come and stay in Liverpool, and there was a Blue Coat weekend, which included a dinner on Saturday night in the school, a service in the school chapel on Sunday morning, tours of the school, of course, during the weekend, and coffee and biscuits were served all day. The Old Blues had a shop based in the school so that memorabilia could be bought, ties and books and so on and so forth, magazines, and it sold out. The Old Blues had, by the time we got to Sunday, the Old Blues had sold everything in the shop. And it was a huge success. We had about 300 Old Blues from across the world. And it was the most incredible weekend. I was astonished, really. I saw people I hadn't seen since the 1960s.
Wow.
So it was a terrific reunion.
Yeah.
And the Old Blues really, really did well. There's no question about it. It was a terrific weekend. And it was one of my last weekends in the school, as it was in July of that year. So yes, it went down very well indeed, and there was also some fundraising going on at the same time, which meant that I think we got up to nearly £500,000 Because I retired, I never did get to know the final figure, because a lot of parents and boys promised to pay over a number of years to avoid tax, you know, that kind of thing. I know when I left, the fund was getting up towards $500,000. And we were able to put the AstroTurf down on the sports pitches, on the sports field, which is what we wanted to do. And we completed the East Wing. Some building work in the East Wing was, that's where the clock tower is. We completed that wing because the governors hadn't done that originally. So there was work there which we finished. So there we are.
Well, that's
happy memories.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it sounds like you had a very satisfying career at Blue Coat. So thank you so much.
It was terrific. It was a very, very good school with excellent staff, excellent pupils. And they were motivated to do well. This business about exam success, the students always found a terrific motivation to succeed. There was something about the school. They believed that the school was special.
Yeah.
Probably because it was 6-1 against them coming in through the entrance tests anyway.
Yeah.
Because there were between six and 800 in those days that sat the exams.
Yeah.
So they were the lucky ones who came. It was 6-1 against. They valued their place. They didn't want to lose it. They were highly motivated to do well, and they did do well.
Yeah.
And the staff taught them well.
Yeah.
So the school was very, very successful. And it was no surprise just after I left that the school was acknowledged as outstanding, because it was very, very near to outstanding all the time. Really. So it's achieved finally its outstanding status just after I retired. So it was very well deserved, I think.
Indeed. Well, thanks very much indeed. Sorry to sort of cut you off there. We've got to press on, but that's been marvellous.
Yes.
Been a fascinating overview over a very big time of change at the school.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you, Sandy. That was fantastic.
Okay, then.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Okay.
All right, and thanks again.
Okay.